Three, two, one. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Carlos, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you, sir?
I hate well. I like good.
You like good?
Yeah, I don't... Why do they have to ruin that with well? Because I just never remember. I'm like, how you doing? I'm good. Good? You mean well? I mean
so judgy, dude.
I know.
Come on, man.
I already feel a little dumb. Did you notice the poster?
Pearl Jam, 2013, 20. Wells Fargo. Wow. I haven't seen that one.
That was, that's the show after the Spectrum was closed down.
Right. That must be one of the, limited ones, the 100 that they do every show that gets sold out within 5 minutes.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is, it is a special poster, and I tried to give it to my kids, and they're like, I don't want that poster.
Right, of course.
It's scary.
Right.
I'm like, what, look at the poster and like it. So we decided, well, we did a podcast the other day on, because you have Urban Float, and you guys were nice enough to come do the podcast with me, which I totally appreciate. And actually, I thought it was a terrific podcast.
It's fun.
But one thing we found out is that you and I are like huge Pearl Jam fans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, nobody loves Pearl Jam more than me. I've been to 9 shows. And you've been to how many?
Probably over 50 now. Yeah.
So we're going to have to call you like Carlos over 50. You know, like right. Jimmy Two Chains or something. We need a Pearl Jam nickname for you.
Yeah.
So we'll start calling you over 50.
Man, a lot of shows.
Well, and then, you know, so after we talked, you started sending me all these great pictures and... And right. I was like, geez, all the shows, most of the shows that I went to, I saw a lot of shows before, like, I even had a cell phone.
Right. Me
isn't
too.
That, isn't that funny?
Yeah, me too.
Because I thought my first show was 97. I guess it was 96. We both went to the same show.
Meriwether Post.
Meriwether Post.
Yeah.
And that was the year that Pearl Jam decided they were going to fight Ticketmaster.
Right.
And so we got the big tickets. And
that was no code, right? Yeah, they released no code under...
And as much as, and I know Pearl Jam had nothing to do with this, but that was one of the worst experiences of my life because we got to the show and parked and, you know, after the show, we went back to the car and they had let every car fill every nook and cranny, you know, where, you know, the rows where you exit
right.
through, they were filled with cars.
Right.
So there, we just had to sit there and wait.
Were you in the pavilion or were you on the lawn?
We were in the pavilion.
Yeah, I was on the lawn. So that show... had very little security. I don't know. So you were in the pavilion. I don't know if you remember when they finally came on after the fastbacks, the whole lawn rushed the pavilion and ran over security and filled the aisles in the pavilion, and security had nothing. They couldn't. I lost my cooler with all my beers. My buddy and I got separated. We were in the front of the lawn.
What were you more concerned about, your buddy or your beers?
I was concerned about watching the show,
right.
and I didn't have the, you know, looking back, I wish I jumped the fence and did the same thing because I thought they were going to all get kicked out, but there wasn't enough security to handle the rush of people coming from the lawn. It completely took over the whole, and for me, for the people in the lawn, I mean, it was an amazing show. It was, but we
now were, was that your first show?
My first live Pearl Jam show, 1996.
That was my first live September. Pearl Jam yep. show.
I was a junior at the University of Delaware.
So you are, how old are you?
46.
46. I'm 50. I'm going to be 51 this year. So 5-year difference.
Yeah.
I remember exactly, since we just started talking about this, I started thinking about it, you know, my whole kind of life with mm-hmm. Pearl Jam. And I was living in San Diego. I was a big, you know, I grew up, you know, Metallica. I went the thrash route. You know, mm-hmm. we were in Metallica, Sepultura, all that kind of stuff. And then I started becoming like a fan of Guns N' Roses. And mm-hmm. that, so it was always that kind of genre. And I guess when that tidal wave of music, I think it was like Stone Temple Pilots. Mm-hmm. They kind of kicked me out of it a little bit. And then Pearl Jam and Nirvana.
Right.
And then you were either like a Pearl Jam or a Nirvana.
Right.
And I liked Nirvana, but I liked Pearl Jam.
Right.
And I think the first song I ever heard was, I want to say it was Alive, but it was either Alive or Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember, oh my God, this yeah. guy.
Yeah.
And what I loved most about Eddie Vedder's voice is just the freeness of his voice. It, you know, obviously they recorded in a studio, but it almost sounded like it was recorded live.
Right.
You know.
Right. It wasn't mastered. It sounded raw.
Yeah, exactly.
It sounded like it was recorded in a garage.
Eddie makes a lot of Mr. Vedder or Eddie or whatever we want to call him. But he has like, you know, he'll say something in a phrase in his singing, but he, you know, he makes like little sounds, like little, you know, I don't even want to attempt to make the sound, but that's what I loved. I think that's what I loved about them in the beginning was just the freeness of the sound of that band. And I think their first video that they shot was Alive.
Right.
And they shot it live.
Right. It was I think it was at the Off Ramp, I believe, when they're for one of their first shows in 1991. And I mean, same. My first ever song I heard was Even Flow. It was right before I went surfing, and it was just, it was in Ocean City, Maryland. My buddy gave me a cassette tape. Says, "Dude, you have to listen to this." I was having a bad day at work and popped it in the cassette player, and that was it. I remember it like yesterday. I'm like, whoa. It was a big pivot point for me in life.
It was a big sounding band, singer.
Every track on that record was amazing to me. Like I just was. I remember you bought a CD.
Oh yeah.
And you liked one or two tracks, you know, off the CD. Yeah. You know, but this one I felt like everything from Once all the way over to Deep and to the very end was just like so
release
all of that. I don't remember another record. Maybe Michael Jackson's Thriller, who knows, that had a track that was just tracks on a CD that every song I felt was just unbelievable.
Unbelievable, and yeah. I agree. And I didn't, you know, at the time I was digging it. Later I wouldn't really realize what a big album that would be. But, you know, and you mentioned it from Once all the way to Release. You know, Release was, you know, I went a lot of shows without seeing that song because it – and, you know, YouTube, you know, it's kind of, we're spoiled now. But back in those days, you just didn't get, you either got the album or that was it.
Right.
You know, maybe a video.
Right. Maybe it's Saturday Night Live.
Oh,
right.
That's a whole other podcast because I'll never forget that night when they played. Right.
Put this at the VCR tape.
Oh, yeah.
David Letterman.
Oh, yeah. I loved all that.
Yeah.
But, you know, back then, I remember, you know, even like when I was working, when I first moved here, I was working at Shortstop. In fact, it was 1994. And Pearl Jam, remember, was it, what was the, every once in a while you could get a live concert. You remember the name of that episode or that program that would perform, allow live, or not allow, but showcase a live band? Well, anyway.
Like Austin City Limits, or miss older than that.
Older than that.
Yeah.
But one night, Pearl Jam was on live, and I listened. I was like, oh, my God. And it was just just more to it. And I don't know if I loved them just because you couldn't get a lot of Pearl Jam.
That was it. The mystique of it, especially they didn't come to the East Coast that often.
Right.
Right. That was from 92, 91, when I discovered them to 96, it was a big mystery. Here, I just kept listening to the record over and over again. I could never see them. I never had enough money to go to New York or go to the big city or even go to like the Midwest. I was just like, man, when are they going to come to Philadelphia?
And that was a whole different band, really. I mean, not as far as band, you know, Dave Eberzese was the drummer then, but like if you like, it was a lot of like thrash. I mean, the people it was almost like a thrash show. You know, there was a lot of thrashing, mosh pit, people jumping on everybody.
I mean, they were in their 20s, you know, early 20s at the time, maybe mid 20s. Yeah, it was raw energy. You know, the very basic setups, their rigs were just high powered Marshalls and humbucker. You know, just very raw rock and roll. It was just amazing at that time. And as they got older, they evolved for sure. It's almost a different sounding band now.
Yeah.
You know,
I had mentioned Guns N' Roses. It was funny when I was out in San Diego, I worked at this thing called Fast Keys. And what it was, you remember, Fox photo booths? Mm-hmm. You remember those? They were like mudslingers almost.
Right.
It was like a little kiosk in the middle of a parking lot. You pull up and get your keys or your turn your film in. But this guy in San Diego turned them all into these fast keys. You know, people would pull up to the window and I'd make keys.
Right.
And I'd sit in there all day and listen to music and read, you know, magazines and stuff. And I was reading this article with Axl Rose, who was talking about how there was this young singer named Chris Cornell. And he was like, just, you know, if Axl liked him, I liked him.
Right.
So right away I went out and got the first Soundgarden album. And did you have any experience with Soundgarden?
Love Soundgarden.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, love Soundgarden. I have all their records too.
Love Chris Cornell.
Yeah.
Love Chris Cornell. And then, you know, so then of course, you know, Pearl Jam came out and then what was the first Temple of the Dog?
Temple of the Dog, yeah.
So they all kind of came out right around the same time. Temple of the Dog, I guess maybe came out a little bit before.
Yeah, it was the super band right after Andy Wood died.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, it was right around the same time between singles.
Right.
Right. Right around that whole time. And they were in a grieving process, and Chris Cornell super close to Andy Wood, and they put together a group, and that's when Eddie just joined Pearl Jam. So it was really kind of right around 10.
Right, and then I also used to have this live tape, and it was called Mookie Blaylock.
Yep.
And it was four songs. I think it was Alive, Even Flow,
Footsteps,
and Yellow Ledbetter.
Okay.
But it was like it was a live like version of it. Not, you know, the later version, which we'd all, you know, come to love, but it was really raw. Mm-hmm. And I had that cassette too. And I was like, oh, you know, it was starting to gather my little Pearl Jam stuff.
Yeah, me too. I had cassette tapes. And I remember going onto like Usenet forums on the internet on dial up and downloading live concerts on whatever files they were called. And I would rip them to cassette tape. And,
oh, yeah, me too. I did that. Burned them on CDs.
Yep. Yeah.
So,
time.
I mean, you know, it's just been a great band, and I, you know, over the years, you know, nothing has shaken them from my tree. You know, they're
the last ones coming out of Seattle. I mean, they've made it.
Well, I read it, or I heard someone say that Eddie Vedder needed to be wrapped in bubble wrap and put away in the National Archives because he's the last.
He's the last one. I know, it's a crazy scene. Yeah.
How bummed out were you when Chris Cornell?
Super bummed, man. Super bummed. An iconic voice, a voice of a generation, of our generation of music for sure. When I read his story, you know, hearing about what he was battling with personally and what it ended up happening is super, it was shocking, really. And I know that they were best friends, Eddie Vedder and Chris.
Yeah.
So, I was super bummed, you know, and I actually had tickets to Temple of the Dog that year. They toured and went to Philly, and I couldn't make it. That was my one time to see Chris Cornell live, and I, with Stone and Mike and Matt, and it was during the school year, and I couldn't make it. And like, literally,
there was a period where it sounded like he was really having some struggles with his voice. I mean, he would do live performances, and you'd be like, ooh.
Yeah, it's a little, I've noticed that. I don't know if YouTube or whatever makes it a, But
later on, it seemed like he worked on that because he really, because I saw some later, you know, kind of before he passed away, I saw him on a YouTube video. He came out with Pearl Jam and sang, you know, one of their Temple of the Dog songs and sounded terrific. And then later his live stuff, I mean, I did a whole ton of logging with my drone with all to that live Chris Cornell. I mean, it was amazing.
Love that. I love Soundgarden, and even is it Queens of the Stone Age?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So here we are, and two guys that love the band, and you want to chat about it, and I'm like, you got 50 shows. I'm almost thinking you almost should be our Pearl Jam podcast leader.
Sure. Well, not leader, but, you know, I'd love to talk about it, man. I don't want to bore your audience with it, but we can talk about other music. I mean, I love all music from that generation, and Pearl Jam's what got me started on guitar. I actually played for about a year or two in a Pearl Jam cover band.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, with some really friends from college we put together, and actually did pretty well with it for a while.
Did you ever go to the shows up in New Jersey?
Yeah, like the Continental Airlines Arena.
East Rutherford,
yeah. Sure. I did the Brooklyn shows.
Well, was it the East Center? Was that what it was called? Because it's a chain's name. It's like the Blockbuster East Center.
Oh, well, you mean talking about right outside of Philly.
Yeah,
that's like, now that's the Susquehanna.
Camden.
Yeah, Camden. That's the Susquehanna now, I think it is.
So I saw a lot of shows there. In fact, I probably saw five shows. A majority of the shows I got to see were at Camden. Mm-hmm. And one of the shows I saw was, they used to have like a bar down below, you know, a sports bar or whatever it is. And there was a cover band, a Pearl Jam cover band opening for Pearl Jam.
I remember that too.
And they were good.
Yeah.
Is that what they were called?
I think it was called Even Flow.
Yeah.
They're a touring band.
They were.
There's a couple of touring bands that actually I like that stuff. It gets a little to me on the cheesy side when you're dressing up like them.
Right.
You know, I just appreciate the music. You don't have to wear flannel and Doc Martens and, you know, you don't have to play the whole role, but I don't mind you being your authentic self, but you don't have to dress up like you just recorded 10.
Right, exactly. So, 20 years later, bro.
Right, totally. So, but no, I haven't seen like a real professional touring tribute band before. The band that I was in, it was called Dissident. Shout out to John Karanko, who's one of the most amazing guitar players in this area, in my opinion. I played with him for a while. We just were ourselves. We just happened to play Pearl Jam, and we played some other stuff, but 90% of it was Pearl Jam. We actually had some pretty big gigs out of it.
Who was the singer? Because, you know, you can be a Pearl Jam band until you get to the singer.
The guy that we had, amazing singer, to be honest with you. He did it. He hit all the notes, honestly. He was raw, loud, powerful. Bobby Crows was his name, and he was from New England, and he was in a band. He came down to Delaware and was from Maine, like the Boston, Maine area, had a little bit of an accent. But when he sang it, he pulled it off, man.
It was good.
I'll send you some of our recordings from the studio. You'll kind of be blown away.
I love the video you sent me with you and your son.
Right, that was their last time that they were in Philly. I think 2016 when they played at the Wells Fargo Center.
There was I didn't go. To, you know, funny. Are you a member of the fan club?
Yeah.
So I joined the fan club. You had to join the fan club back mm-hmm. in 96 to get the tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had low numbers. Yeah. I think I had a 5-digit number.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always renewed it. And one year I went to get tickets, I think, for the Philly show. And they said, you know, you're not a member.
You let it lapse.
Yeah, but I didn't. I didn't. So I was annoyed and... Because that's a big deal.
It is a huge deal, man. I was a 5-digit number, and I let it lapse, too. And I end up having my numbers 155XXX, whatever the last three are. But, you know, I still have decent seats. You know, on the floor, I'm like 13, 14 rows back.
Well, I emailed them. I'm like, look, you know.
Look me up. Right. Yeah, I did the same thing.
Yeah, and they
did.
And they actually gave me my number back. And that's the last show that I was able to go to was with my buddy Dan. And we had front row. We got.
So they gave you your 5-digit number back.
They gave me my 5-digit number back.
That's awesome.
The problem is now, I don't think they really. I'm not sure there's seniority as much.
Yeah,
anymore.
There is, man. It's seniority, but it's in a section. So it's a lottery, so your number will be probably in the first three rows or five rows, and just pull your number or whatever is in the first five or whatever rows. So, no, that's awesome. They couldn't find mine. I joined it when it was, you know, yeah, back at No Code, you know, and then the Vital. I think it was called the Vitalogy Health Club at one point.
Yeah.
And before it was called officially the 10 Club. But that's awesome, man. Hold on to that thing.
Well, and I haven't even, you know, it's funny because I've had, when I went to that show, it said, you know, do you want seats or do you want floor? I said, I'll take the floor. And we ended up being on the front row. But that's I'm not awesome. Sure I would do the front row again.
Oh, man. It's like complaining about being in first class.
I'm not complaining. I'm just discussing. Because I'm trying to lead myself into the next point was that there's, you know, there's something that happens at a.
I agree with you.
I will say that, let me tell you this little funny story. Because I took my buddy Dan. He's been on the podcast, Dan Marinucci. And Dan had never been to a Pearl Jam show. So we go. And, you know, if you got floor seats, you have to sit in line and wait. Because they, you know, it's a different line. And we sat there for probably 4 hours and just bullshitted with everybody. And then they finally let us in, and we go in, and we're right on the rail. I mean, we're one person back from the rail. And so we're standing there with, obviously, everyone that has low numbers, you know, dedicated. You know, I'm like, yeah, you know,
right.
It's my ninth show.
Yeah, cork sniffers.
Yeah, this guy's, that's my 250th right, show. Right. I'm like, oh, shit. And then Dan's like, it's my first show. And they kind of gather around.
Yeah, like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, what are you doing down here?
That and happened to my brother-in-law.
It's a little personal with those folks.
It can be, man. And, it's a cult. For sure. I had front row. Again, a shout out to Brian Kudis, is one of my other good friends out of, he lives now in Alabama, but he was a super hardcore Pearl Jam fan. His number was in the low 100s and he got front row at Pittsburgh for us. And that, you know, I agree with you. The energy's behind you.
Yeah. So yeah. To my point is that I've been to a front row, I've been to a middle, and I've been to a back. I chose not to buy tickets I talked about the show when they opened for Devo opened up. I think it was, I saw them two nights. Social Distortion opened up and Devo. I can't remember which one it was, but I think it was the night of Devo, and we had nosebleeds, and it was not, it wasn't great.
Right.
I mean, no offense, but it was too far.
I've been to those shows too.
I'm like, it's a Pearl Jam show. I don't care.
Yeah, I just want to be in the. I want to be in the building.
Yeah, it was not so great. Yeah. But I've also been in the front row, which was great. You know, and I told you this before. It was a show where nobody opened up, and it was Pearl Jam for 3 hours, and I just could not get over the fact that Eddie Vedder sang for 3 hours mm-hmm. like he does. I mean, I'll do a one karaoke Pearl Jam, and I'm doing sign language for the rest of the night because right. I'm done. Right. And but. My favorite, most memorable show was at Madison Square Garden. Hmm. My ex-wife Diane and I went up, and we were on the right, and we were about one quarter of the way back
mm-hmm.
from the front.
1998, or when was that? 2000?
I think it was 2000. 99, 2000, somewhere yeah. right in there. Mm-hmm. And the energy, for, you know, we were right by the band, but the crowd
yeah.
sings every song.
Sure.
And it's, you know, there's it's something, like, to me, that always makes me...
It's crazy. Yeah.
And if they start with release, well, there goes the tears because I just can't.
It's church.
And I was adopted.
Okay.
So for some reason, that release song always is like, you know, where's my father? You know, this mm-hmm. whole, you know, oh, mm-hmm. dear dad. And so when that song comes out, I'm
same here. Same here. That song, I think, definitely impacts a lot of different people in different ways. I don't know if you saw the Chicago, the Wrigley special.
I watched it.
Yeah. So the guy who waited 3 days up front, he had lost his father. Same thing with release. They played it and Eddie Vedder kind of dedicated it to him. He was on the rail, started crying, you know. Mm. So, yeah, it's a powerful song for sure. It's another total iconic generational song sound.
There's a period, I think, of like in the late 90s where Pearl Jam, I think, was just awesome. You know, Eddie was just still like, yeah. he'd just walk up, his hair was down, and he just, and you'd be like, who is this guy?
Right.
This guy's crazy.
Crazy, right. Elevates when he sings. You're waiting for him to elevate off the stage.
Do you remember, was it Monkey Wrench Radio?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it was called? Mm-hmm. Remember they used to, every once in a while, they'd perform, all of a sudden the radio station would have Monkey Wrench Radio on, and they would kind of do like... interview him a little bit about, mm-hmm. I think it was maybe No Code. I don't know what album they were working on.
Yeah, I think they did that once, Self-Pollution Radio. It was for Vitalogy.
Yeah, Vitalogy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. They played No Corduroy, and they did it again as well, and it was it Yield?
Brain of Jay.
Yeah, right, on Yield. Right.
Yeah, it was
Evolution,
Yield.
Evolution, yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
And... But I'd be like, oh, my God.
Yeah, no. All that stuff was so hard back then just to get... Because they were so behind the curtain, you know?
Do you think that has... and obviously the music is what is huge, but do you think a band could repeat something like that now?
That's a great question. I don't know. Music is... It's so different now.
There's no commitment.
And it's highly produced. There's not just a 5-piece band anymore. It's, you know, it's weird. I don't know how, maybe, you know, I would think a unique sound would come and.
Well, I mentioned this, my son's a huge 21 Pilots fan, but you know, you can see 21 Pilots. I mean, you know, I can just go on YouTube and just watch 21 Pilots concerts all day.
And that dude's, it's just a drummer and keyboarder, right?
It's a drummer. Well, he plays bass too.
Yeah. So there's like two-piece.
Two-piece.
Right? Yeah. So there's so much. I think the technology is what's different. You know, the analog sound versus the digital sound. You know, it's just different.
But it also. But there's no wanting more. Like I can just fill myself with 21 Pilots and just sit back and be stuffed. But when we were searching back in the days of a Pearl Jam or even like. Soundgarden, mm-hmm. you know, even back in those days.
Right.
I mean, you got one thing. I mean, you got a CD, and you, mm-hmm. You know, you went through the whole thing.
Right.
Read every word. I remember even as a kid, and you can tell me if this. You had LPs, right?
Sure.
So remember, it was like, you know, there was the side that kept the plastic on the cover. Mm-hmm. Some people took it off.
Right.
But just when you opened it, just the smell,
mm-hmm.
you know, the liner notes, you'd read everything.
Right.
You know, it was a commitment. You put it on the beginning and it played through.
It's special and unique to you because it's, you know, for us back then, it wasn't the easiest. It wasn't the cheapest. And again, to me, there's a mystique behind it, you know, and here with technology, music's accessible from everything,
mm-hmm.
you know, and artists are back then, I thought they were making money from record sales. Today, it's almost they're making money from shows versus record sales because of iTunes.
They don't make money from records.
Yeah, right. So 99 cents or Spotify and Pandora with licensing deals. So, you know, it's really an interesting arc. You know, remember with Napster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't even tell you how many shows I downloaded from Napster back in the, you know, the late 90s.
Shame. Right. Shame. Me too.
You too.
Absolutely.
I knew you did. Yeah.
Oh my God. Absolutely. Well, sorry.
Yeah, totally. Me too. I mean, heck, why wouldn't? Didn't cost you anything. You just had to be a little internet savvy and look for stuff. And the people on the fan club would post where it was and titles of the tracks, and you'd go after it. And
I did that with Napster, but I also made a point decided that, and this is now I think I pay $11 a month and I get whatever.
Right.
But before that, I made a point to buy albums.
Sure. Me too.
For 99 cents. God damn it, here you go.
I know, right, here you go.
Well, I shouldn't say, I think it was like $9.99.
Yeah, right, $10. Cents,
but I bought the album.
Right.
And I paid. I mean, because I wanted to support the band. Sure. I love the band.
Yeah. You know, any good music that you like, you want to be supportive for sure.
Absolutely.
But it's a big mystery now. You know, it's all about content and YouTube.
Well, and my wife and I, we like watching The Voice. I always say, I wonder if Eddie Vedder could win on The Voice. Probably not. But, you know, we were watching it last night and, you know, and no offense to anybody that's fat, but, you know, there was a few fat ones on there and they were great, but they all lost, you know. And then they brought out some special guest, some special country girl, and she's, you know, so skinny and blonde and beautiful. And I go, that's what people are looking for. Unfortunately, it's a shame, but, you know, a voice is only so much.
That's true. For sure, there's pop. You know, pop music is exactly that, popular, right? Yeah. What's popular to the masses.
Well, and then you can only, you know, now you could just pick a song. Oh, I like this song, but I don't like the rest. Or
right.
I like this song, or you fill a playlist. Sometimes, and I'll even do that, I'll fill a playlist of just Pearl Jam stuff, but mm-hmm. I try to pick favorite stuff.
Sure.
And then I run to it, and I'm like, all right, I'm tired of these.
Right.
Let's get a new
list. Right.
Luckily, I can, you know, I can pretty much play any Pearl Jam, and it's good.
It's easy and it's accessible now. So what's getting me lately is when the 10 Club and releases stuff that I still search for that special, unique thing. You know, oh, we're putting out this show on vinyl only for the first 500. And you're like, oh, God, I got to have it. It's kind of like when you're in the merch line at mm-hmm. the shows. I'll have that. I'll take that shirt. I'll take that poster.
Well, and it's funny because I brought my Pearl Jam shirt. I don't wear it because I don't like it.
I have that one, too.
I like the, you know, I love the band, but I don't like the shirt. I don't like the way it fits. I feel like this is a little off-center. I was like.
Is that a Pearl Jam shirt? It says Get Some, because there's a song, Got Some.
Yeah, no, this is not. This is just
Batman and Robin.
Action
it's pretty
heroes,
cool.
But thank you.
Very cool.
But I was like. You know, I love, and you showed me, you sent me that picture of you wearing the No Coat shirt. I had that shirt. That was the one that had the piece of tape, like
right.
it looked like the
right.
set list was taped on the back.
Right.
And I can't tell you how many times people tried to,
right.
dude, somebody taped something on your back.
Right.
I'm like,
all the time.
It's a set list, bro.
Yeah.
Back up. Stop pulling on my shirt. But that shirt, that shirt fit great. I wear the hell out of it. And then I ended up cutting off the sleeves and now it just disintegrated. It went to nowhere.
I still have that shirt. That's my go-to show shirt. You know, I'll just preserve that just for the shows.
No, I heard you're not supposed to wear a Pearl Jam, or you're not supposed to wear a shirt of the band that you're going to see.
Well, it's hard to
you
think
missed
about
that memo?
It. Yeah, I missed that memo. Well, all 30 other thousand fans must have missed it too. I mean, they're all wearing them.
Maybe we're just all dorky. I don't know. Do you have a favorite album?
I mean, 10, obviously, it's an easy answer for me. I mean, the first three records are always, to me, my favorites. The sound, the bands, the band changed a little bit as it got. I like them all. I would say the first three are my favorites, up to No Code, maybe first four. But 10, yeah, for sure. I
can listen to basically, 10 all day. When Matt Cameron came on, you just stopped liking him.
Whoops.
Yeah. Did you say that out loud?
I did.
Yeah, I like Matt Cameron. He's a great drummer. He's a business drummer. He's here for the business. Right. Take care of business.
He's
got
one snare drum, one cymbal.
Well, I love Dave Abbruzzese. I thought he was the shit. And I've watched other shows about him. That dude. And I think he calls
out Matt Cameron too. He's like, dude, the energy of the songs are not the same.
They're not.
They're not. He goes, the drummer's job is to drive the energy and the power of the song. When you listen to the way I play it versus the way he plays Even Flow or whatever the song is, and he's right.
Yeah, there's no stepping on Dave Abbruzzese doing Even Flow.
Oh my God. And a great example of that is the SNL shows from the 90s.
Absolutely. He was just a hair and cymbals.
Yeah, there's 1,000 cymbals, tons of drums. Apparently, he was very tech. There was a book that was released called Five Against One. It was like an unauthorized autobiography of the band, written by some guy who was inside the band. Like,
I can't imagine him authorizing anything, quite honestly. Right. But go ahead.
But it was an interesting. I read the book front to back. It took me 2 days to read the whole book. It was like that thick. But they talked. The author talked about the whole controversy with Abbruzzese.
Well, I think he had a gun.
Yeah, he was also a conservative.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, that was that was also a big part of it. And they just, Eddie and him just didn't get along.
Well, I didn't know if that song got a gun.
I believe that's what it's about. Okay, right. Man. That's right. And then apparently, that Abbruzzese said there was a conflict. Eddie said thought that he was just so technical. He was a technical, just a really good, academic drummer that just was very creative and stuff. And then Go on Verses, mm-hmm. Driven, I think almost written by Dave Abbruzzese. But like, I miss that of the band. I really do. I like Matt Cameron. He's good. Great drummer. Great drummer.
Great drummer.
Different sound though.
Very
I like
different.
I like Jack Irons.
Well, that was my next point. I love Jack Irons.
Yeah, tribal, like
simple, minimal.
Yeah, yeah.
But he had a kick drum, snare, and one tom.
He's using his hands,
He was good, but
no. And I didn't know he was the Chili Peppers drummer. I didn't know that until he joined the band. I didn't realize he was once the Chili Peppers drummer. That's pretty
either.
Cool.
Actually, I didn't know that. I mean, I knew that because I heard that. I didn't.
Right. Same here.
Right. But I actually liked old Chili Peppers back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I was living in San Diego, I was hanging out with this chick and she really dug them, and I dug them. They were good.
I liked the Chili Peppers too.
I'm not a big fan of them as they've aged.
Yeah, I know. They still take their shirts off. They still look good, and they still still thinking they're 20. What I mean? Like, it's kind of funny to me a little bit.
Hey.
Still charismatic, Well,
Someone went and saw, and my buddy Dan went and saw him. He said he was really disappointed, and not because the music was just not great. He said the music was terrific. They sounded terrific, but they came out, they played, and they left.
Right.
Business. That was like
a business.
We're here on business?
Yeah, we're here on business, on a business
trip. There was no chatting. No, hey, ho.
Did you see the Rock and Roll? I'm sure you saw the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction. You saw Matt Chamberlain play live with him. How funny. I thought that was really cool. But
was he the first?
He was the very first drummer.
First drummer.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dave Cruzan. I think it was Dave Cruzan that was there. I think it was Dave Cruzan, not Matt Chamberlain. I can't remember which one it was, but he would wear a white shirt and tie and was playing alive. I think he was still struggling. Like, where do I play this part?
It's not sounding alive.
Right.
Well, So the first three albums, and I agree.
You too? What's your favorite? 10, obviously. I mean,
yes. I mean, the funny thing about Pearl Jam is that, and they didn't do it as much, maybe a little bit on their first album, but they used to always do, what was it? Flies or Bugs. Remember they had Bugs. They'd always have this song on there. I'm like, I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't waste this spot on this rap.
And that song really annoys my wife. And Rats, too. She doesn't like that song.
Rats. Well, actually, I don't mind Rats.
Yeah,
Bugs.
Yeah.
Bugs got on my nerves.
On the accordion.
Yeah. But, there was always like this song. So, those first three albums were amazing, but there's been some great albums, and even their last one, Lightning Bolt,
was pretty good.
It was good.
Yeah, totally.
Tell me if this is how it seems like every album after 10 I'd be like, oh, okay. I'm going to have to listen to this one a couple times.
Right.
Well, maybe not. Right. What was the second album? It wasn't Five Against One. It was...
What, the Verses?
Verses. Verses. I always want to call it Five Against One.
Yeah, yeah.
But Verses.
Right.
That album was pretty freaking amazing.
Broke records. Broke the Beatles record.
Yeah. It did it?
Yeah. A million records sold in a week. It broke the Beatles record.
And that's before iTunes.
Yeah.
That's actually physically record going sales, and buying it.
Record sales. It broke the record sales of 1 week of the Beatles, I believe.
Yeah. So that, I mean, I actually had no problem getting into that album. I think the first one I struggled with was No Code.
Me too.
And
me too.
Now when I go back and look at it, it's an amazing album.
Yep.
But it had a couple of little funky little songs in it too. I'm like, why did you waste this spot?
Right.
We don't get much here, guys.
They're trying to be authentic, you know. They don't want to be selling out. All about the art. Don't judge art.
You know? Well, and to my point was that, you know, Lightning Bolt, I was I'm really gonna have to listen to this one a couple times. And I might have given up a little on it. I love it. It's great, but just recently I was listening to some, you know, some for some reason randomly was playing on my phone through my Bluetooth, and it was Pearl Jam. I'm like, oh my God, is this new?
Right.
Is this new Pearl Jam? And it was just on Lightning Bolt. I was like, oh.
Yeah, I don't dig a lot of the songs on that record. I mean, I'll listen to it and stuff, but Mind Your Manners and Lightning Bolt are probably my two favorites. And, you know.
They came out with the song Sirens since.
Is pretty good.
Do you know what that song was?
Which one?
They released one song. It was almost like a test song.
Yeah, it's the one, oh gosh, what's it called? Yeah, it's a political song. It was a political song from, something happened, and then, was it a school shooting or something?
Mind Your Manners? No, that's on, Lightning Bolt. Mind Your Manners.
Right.
It was like, gotcha. Or get out or something.
Yeah. Right.
Gotcha. Yeah. He didn't find it.
They have I'll find it. I'll have it.
I have to give you somewhere. My Wi-Fi password.
Yeah. No, it's in here somewhere. But they
that's the one thing you can say on out loud in public is your Wi-Fi password, because it only works here.
Yeah, check it out. So yeah, on Spotify, Alive is number one. Number two is Even Flow. Three is Black. Four is Jeremy. Five is Last Kiss. Their number one selling single of all time is Last Kiss.
Well, so we'll talk about that. You know, when and you've seen them, you know, every, you know, Pearl Jam used to do, you know, like in Daughter or in mostly a lot of times in Daughter that and then they would just go into, you know, some other song.
Mm-hmm.
And
Can't Deny Me.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the song you're talking about.
Oh, that's the song.
Yeah, the single.
Can't Deny Me. But they would go into like these, you know, old 50s songs.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, Last Kiss was a song they used to kind of play around with. And
that was a soundcheck song.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was a soundcheck song. And they recorded it. And look, there you go. Something crazy, millions of dollars later.
Yeah. But those were those little Easter eggs that you used to get at a show. Or, you know, they'd go like Pink. They'd go into like, we don't need no.
Comfortably Numb.
Yeah. But all to that rhythm of Daughter.
Right. Oh, the tag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So that, you know, but I think, you know, past that, you know, Avocado.
Avocado Records, pretty good.
I love that album.
That's a good record.
And Binaural.
That's another good record.
Good record, but not at first.
It took all those after No Code, after Vitalogy, it took me a few listens for sure.
But, Life Wasted.
Life Wasted.
You know, it's funny because he sings like a guy that's sober. He talks about, don't go into your head unattended, you know, go up the stairs into that head. You know, that's all like recovery stuff, but he's not in recovery. You know, he can't
go to your meetings. Yeah.
hey. But you know, that's all, it's deep, you know.
No, he's definitely an amazing, I think one of the most amazing storytellers.
Absolutely.
Actually, you know, and you know, songwriting 101, you know, that they teach that kind of stuff at Berkeley, and he does it organically. He just tells stories. He's been through a lot in his life. It's pretty cool from a songwriting perspective. But you'll find this funny, Tom, but Eddie Vedder was amazing, but it was the music that got me.
Mm-hmm.
The riffs from Stone, the leads from Mike. Like, to me, that's, the singing was phenomenal, but Eddie Vedder was only a piece to me, for my personal taste, was a piece of the puzzle.
Right.
You know what I mean? But yeah, great songwriter.
So do you think they could go with a new singer?
I mean, clearly not. But Bobby Crowe's up in New England from my old band. He probably could do it, like Journey.
No, forget it. Actually, that guy was good.
Arnold Panetta.
He was good.
Filipino, man.
He
discovered
was
a karaoke bar.
Are you Filipino?
Yeah.
Hey, shout out to the Filipino.
Arnold Panetta, man. A karaoke bar, all 4'10" of them.
Did you watch that special on Netflix about him?
Some of it. Yeah, some of
it's
it.
It's a great story. I mean, the guy's, yeah. I mean,
he can belt it, man. Unbelievable.
He's like one of the, that's that, you know, Steve Perry, Whitney Houston, Mariah right. Carey. You don't mess with them.
Yo, no.
You better be prepared if you're going to go in there.
That is some big, big shoes to fill. And when they got inducted to the Hall of Fame, which I think was the same show as Pearl Jam, I believe. I think Journey and Pearl Jam got inducted at the same time. And Steve Perry was up on stage with the guys and Arnold wasn't there. You know, and Steve was like, you know, hats off to you, Arnold. You know, keep rocking it. I thought that was a pretty fascinating story. So, but yeah, we're super proud of the Philippines bringing him out.
Someone just said to me they thought that Steve Perry just came out with another record.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I didn't go searching it out.
But there was something with his voice.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is if you're going to sing that good, eventually it's going to start to struggle.
Oh my gosh. Wow, he was like another iconic sound, just like you said, Whitney Houston, Steve Perry.
I used to be a big Journey fan. I still love Journey, but
great
we used to just kick it and listen to that Journey live, you know, when he did that Lights.
Oh, I know. The Sopranos kind of killed it for me for Journey. The last episode.
Why? Why'd you do that?
I know.
Well, but let's get back to the real topic at hand. You don't like Eddie Vedder. I'm very upset about this news.
No, I like Eddie Vedder. It's just that, like, I know a ton of fans that's just about Eddie Vedder. And then I get it, and it's totally fine. He's amazing. But, like, Mike and Stone and Jeff and whatever drummer they use
yeah,
is, to me, the meat on the bones.
What do you think about Boom Gasper?
Boom? Yeah, you know. Eddie's a surfer, you know, he spends a ton of time in Hawaii, plucked the guy out of Oahu or Hawaii, and he plays the B5 and B3, I mean, and that's pretty cool. It's a cool sound.
It's
Crazy
cool
Mary,
sound.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, my God, I love Crazy Mary.
Yeah, that's really cool when him and Mike go back and forth and rip leads back and forth. That's so cool. I like Boom. That's,
yeah.
You know, that's that Dan. I never hear him, you know, pretty much in the shows until he's actually isolated.
I don't even think he's. I don't think he's playing a lot. I mean, he only. It's not like he's adding.
Did they unplug him when he's
not adding B3 to Live? You know,
right. I mean, he's rocking in the free world.
Yeah, when they start getting into binaural, I'm not sure what the first album he was on.
It's hard to say. I almost want to say Avocado or something like that. Maybe.
Well, I remember Love Boat Captain was the first time I remember hearing organ.
Right,
and I'm
not
sure was that binaural.
Love Boat Captain, man. Was that binaural? I want to say that was Pearl Jam or Avocado.
Yeah,
I'm 100% sure.
Well, I remember they opened with that at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah,
and
that was a big opening song. Yeah. Hand me a tissue.
I'm fucking a pussy sometimes. I swear to God.
You're sensitive, man. That's
great. Watch out for my family. Is that release? Oh my God.
Yeah, it was emotional, man. I tell you, I don't know what it is. It totally changed my perspective in a lot of different ways. I don't know.
Well, I really, you know, I think of my lucky stars that I was alive, not only during Pearl Jam, but alive during, you know, LPs and cassettes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was, music was, and it's, you know, it's fun. It's easy for me to take my old emotions and put it on the current state of mind here. But, you know, I feel like there was a bigger commitment to music, and it's great, whatever. Music has to do what music has to do, and they have to make their money somehow. But I just know that, you know, when an album came out, that was it. That was my source.
We had to seek it.
We had to go find it. Well, and I when Pearl Jam came out, I lived in San Diego, and there was a little record store called Lou's Records. And I could go in there and just flip through old records and pull out bootleg Pearl Jam albums.
Yeah.
You know, like some live version of Daughter or something. I'd be like, oh, my God, buy it. You know, but this is like had been going on before, you know, 10 came out.
Yeah.
Which is.
Yeah. Bootleg CDs were really cool back then. I remember having just a package or this CD holders of just like bootlegs. I remember I had a Japanese version of version of 10 or
isn't that funny? You'd have a Japanese version, exact same music, exact same thing, but maybe it's in Japanese.
No,
in
it was words. it was 10, but they added some other tracks to it just for the Japanese market. It was a yellow sleeve, and I had a bunch of those types of bootlegs that you just, you know, you go to the record store and you happen to see it. And it was pre-owned or whatever. You bought it, and it was super rare. And I actually left that holder at a car wash, and it's gone forever.
Mm.
And man, oh man, I think about that.
Oh, it's on eBay.
It probably
is. I was wondering if I could buy my records from you.
Right. Probably like 99 cents, you know, but yeah, it was really cool.
Would you buy them if you could?
I would in a heartbeat, man. I would in a heartbeat. All those real, you know, the singles that you would see out there that were bootlegs that weren't released in the U.S. or whatever, especially the ones that weren't released in the U.S. I thought that was really, when you went into the record store and you would sift through the CDs or the LPs, you're like, oh, wow.
Do you remember when, I don't know if it was one of those Bridge Benefit shows, but there was a live version of Trouble.
Right.
Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That was the shit.
That was awesome.
That song was the shit.
So you were in San Diego. So you didn't go to Mountain View and see any of the Bridge shows? So you didn't go up north?
Nope.
Yeah.
I moved here in 94.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Oh, wow.
I mean, and I will tell you, you know, actually, I got in a little trouble in San Diego and actually went, I had to go to, well, it wasn't jail, but it was a probation camp in Big Bear.
Whoa.
I got in drugs and shit. And when Versus came out, I was in work camp.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, somebody go buy that album for me. But when I came out of work camp, I left San Diego. I had to get out of there.
Yeah.
I was headed for trouble. My parents, thank God, you know, they said, you can go with us to Delaware. You can stay here. I said, I think I better go.
Wow.
And got here by the skin of my teeth and struggled a bit here and then finally got sober in 97. But
That's awesome.
Yeah, I always say it's awesome for the rest of the people out there in the world because I was just danger.
Yeah, but you know, it's also shaped who you are today.
Yeah, no, you know,
San Diego's like that. I've heard though, and I spent a lot of time in San Diego because that's when I worked for the camera company. You know, one of the offices were down there.
You can't say the name.
I can, but then we'll just end up veering off in another direction.
Say it. I dare you.
Great company. Still own a lot of stock there. So
great company.
Yeah. We can have another podcast about GoPro.
Well, I was sitting on the couch last night. You know, I saw you. I sent you a friend request, and you accepted. And I clicked on it, and I was like, "Honey, look at this guy. This fucking guy's been. This guy's been at GoPro. He's been at IBM. I don't know where he's at now. I don't know what he's doing, but." Look at this guy.
Oh, yeah, right.
This guy's awesome. Yeah, right. Like, I think I smell bromance in the air. I go, stop it. You know, what's wrong with the... I really don't have a lot of guy friends. I have a ton of...
Why you hashtagged your text to me BFF?
Hey. But, you know, I don't have a lot of friends. I have a lot of friends.
Got one more, pal. I'm happy to be here.
Right. So you know. It's, you know, I'm like, look at this. But, you know, that's cool because honestly, in 94, I wasn't hanging out with people that were GoPro. What? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I might have got caught on a GoPro. But I wasn't hanging out with them.
That was that whole GoPro story, and I've been through it since the beginning with those guys because my one of my closest I would say my and he would call me the same a best friend. He's the co-founder of GoPro.
Who's the lead guy? The
Nick
guy?
Woodman.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nick and Neil Dana. He was in my wedding, and they the two of them started the company in 2007, and Man, we can talk about that for hours. I got stories for days for that.
And we will, maybe we'll do that. And I will say, you know, it looked like GoPro was struggling for a while. In fact, I didn't particularly care for the camera, but I just got the new GoPro and, you know, my hat's off to the whoever, if you were involved, that's a great camera. I mean, we've talked a little bit about
it. Hero 7's good. I mean, they're going to continue to innovate. They own the market. They're kind of gotten back to what they're
doing. I'm not sure how their drone market is, but...
No, it's gone.
Goodbye, drone market.
Yeah, the drone market's gone as well as their professional media and broadcast, which is where I sat.
Well, and you know, it's funny. Drones are, you know, I think drones are going to slowly start to fade.
Yeah, because they're going to get more regulated.
There are, well, the drone above my head, this Altel right here, I flew this thing all over the state, and I used to be able to, you know, it's supposed to stay in your vision, but I'd fly it mile out.
Yeah.
And I tried to fly it yesterday, and I think they've uploaded it, new software into it, and I can barely get it over to that pond, and it starts losing signal.
Oh.
So.
That's pretty cool. I like the color.
Yeah, that's, I had a great GoPro, a Mavic.
Is that a DJI?
That one is.
Okay.
But I had the DJI Mavic Pro. That drone was the shit.
Right.
And I was trying to, I was filming the crop duster guy.
Crop duster. Pearl Jam song.
Yeah, oh, yeah. We'll go. Oh, that's a nice segue back into the topic. But I was filming this guy, you know, crop dusting. I wanted to get the spinning circles off the wings. And I was out there, and it's like,
that's neat.
Beep, beep, beep. Battery low. I was like, one more minute. And it. On the way back, it just
died
and landed in a fucking 80-foot oak tree. And it's still there. Bye-bye. But, you know, Crop Duster, that's a great song. Yeah. So what do you think? What's up with Pearl Jam?
So what I heard was the death of...
Drop some info on us.
What I heard, this is a little few months old, though, is that the death of Chris Cornell really affected Eddie Vedder. And I don't know if you get the Alternative Nation emails. So that's like the grunge or that era newsletter website. And they posted an article that apparently Jefferstone said something. We don't know where we are right now because Eddie, like, we thought we were going to finish the record. And now Eddie's doing a tour with The Who. Did you know about that, right? He's opening up for The Who in England, doing a short tour in the U.K., so there's a little, from what I've heard, a little disarray just because of the death. You know, Eddie's taken the death pretty hard, you know, his passing pretty hard.
So he's going to go tour with The Who.
Right, right.
This is too much, guys. I'm out. Well, and you know what? And you mentioned I had tickets to see him, his solo show in D.C., and I had to give them up. I didn't even give him up. I just didn't go.
Have you seen him solo? No. I haven't seen him solo. I have the DVD. I watched his, what is it called, Bridge Under the Water or something DVD that he released. It was pretty good.
Is it Water on the Road?
Water on the Road, something like Water that. Over the Road. I have the DVD. I watched it once. It was good. It does a pretty good live show, single show. But that's, I mean, they have a record. Apparently they're going to finish this year is what I heard. And hopefully they'll tour. You know, I don't know when they're going to tour again, but hopefully they'll come back. You know, like my son's a huge Pearl Jam fan now, Soundgarden, Nirvana. My son's a great drummer right now. He's been drumming for like a year and a half, 2 years. He can play all their songs.
Wow.
Like technically correct. It was pretty cool.
He got into drumming. Let's see if I can say that correctly. And I was like, nah, we're not doing that. I don't have room for that. I mean, I did not work at GoPro. I worked at Shortstop. So we don't have a drumming room.
Ours is the basement, but it was loud.
And, yeah.
It's so cute. My son put like, we had some extra mattresses downstairs, and he's going to kill me for saying this, but he put them on the side of his drum kit thinking that it would absorb the sound.
Oh, that's going to help. No help.
Right. Well, still shakes the roof.
And, you know, so he didn't drum, and now he's hanging out with his buddy Oliver, and they have a little band, and they're practicing. So David's doing the sound.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's still fun.
Absolutely. I go, look, David, you know, because he felt, you know, I don't know if he'd kill me for saying that, but he wanted to be part of the band.
Sure, yeah.
And he just didn't, his dad didn't allow him to be a drummer. And he wasn't bad. Do you know Mr. Hetfield over at Rehoboth Elementary?
Yep.
You know, he took drum lessons with Mr. Hetfield. Right. He did this after school of rock thing.
Yeah.
They played at the Rudder.
Yeah.
David drummed at the Rudder.
Mm-hmm.
And But, you know, you gotta be all in.
You gotta be all in. My son's all in, man. I have to actually step outside sometimes.
No, I mean, you have to be all in. Of course your son's all in. They're all in everything.
Right, right.
I'm talking about you had to be all in.
It's not cheap for sure. And shout out to Chris Forrest at B&B Music. He's a great instructor for Charlie. And he's turned into a really good, actually, to be honest, it's kind of funny. I have stopped playing guitar for a long time because I've been so busy with Urban Float and stuff. And I can't barely even hang with Charlie now. He's that good. Like he's like, Dad, come on, do something better than that. Like,
okay, I can't. That's all I got, man. Yeah, I know. Just drum.
I know. He's ripping it on the drums now. So that's really cool to see him find music. And it's really cool from a father-son perspective that he enjoys the same music that I do. And he loves to go to the shows. So Pearl Jam played on his birthday, and that's when we were in Montana.
Nice.
On August 13th.
So did you just fly out there, special trip, right for the show?
Father-son trip. You know, we did Chicago and Montana. Very fortunate, very lucky, very appreciative. My son and my kids live a pretty fortunate.
Through their pretty fathers.
Lucky. Pretty lucky.
Lucky bastard. My dad didn't take me to shit. I will say my mom bought me Van Halen tickets.
Hey.
1984.
Ho. My dad took me to see the Pointer Sisters.
Were you looking at their pointers?
That's terrible.
Sorry.
That's a visceral response.
That's inappropriate, sir. My mom was, you know, she bought me my first AC/DC album.
There you go.
She went and stood in line. She stood in line for Van Halen tickets and... So I always give a lot of credit to my mom.
I took a 180 in music that time, dude. I was like heavy into hip hop and rap in the 90s and in high school. And then it literally was a 180. When I heard 10, that was it, man. I mean, I was super into like Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, like in the early days, Michael Jackson and stuff. But like in high school, I was heavy into rap and
you never went like the Guns N' Roses.
I found it all through Pearl Jam, though. I loved Guns N' Roses. I loved Metallica, and I loved all of that stuff, but I found it through the avenue. Rock and roll, to me, was, at that time, Pearl Jam was the bridge for that.
Pearl Jam's like,
it brought me
come
in
on
way.
In.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Leave
yeah.
that rap crap back
there. Right. It was, exactly,
put them
man.
Baggy pants. Leave those baggy pants in there.
Yeah, leave those Cavaricci's behind.
This is your new uniform. It is a flannel. Come on
yeah,
in.
Exactly. It was exactly that, man. It was a 180 for me. It wasn't like this gradual, like I was in the Iron Maiden and Quiet Riot and all of a sudden, you know.
See, that's the job. And I actually grew up in Albuquerque. So Albuquerque was the kind of town where, you know, every band came through Albuquerque. And they all played at the rodeo barn. I mean, it was Tingley Coliseum, but, you know, if the concert wasn't there, it was a rodeo place.
Right.
And they had a horse track and the state fair. But, I grew up on Iron Maiden. That was, but, you know, that was like an event, you know, an Iron Maiden. I don't know if you've ever seen Iron Maiden in concert, but that's a life changer, man. Those guys put
my
on.
My old boss from GoPro, nut of Iron Maiden, absolute nut. The airplane, right? Their airplane that they fly in, it's all decked out and stuff. It's pretty funny.
Well, and that's a great drum story too, because there's a period like during, I don't want to say "To Tame the Lamb," but "To Tame the Lamb" was on the album. With Eddie on the front in the padded room, and then Power Slave. But there was a drummer that played then. He was amazing, and then he disappeared. So.
Oh, heavy metal drummers were, they were amazing. Like, that whole genre of music. The songwriting wasn't all to me. I don't know what kind of stories they were telling, you know, but because it was party rock, I guess.
Well, Iron Maiden was actually really known for having, to write songs about a story. There was a movie, was it Dune? Remember Dune, the movie?
Dune, yeah, right.
And they talked about the... You know, Icarus, the lamb without any water. Well, they wrote a song about it, To Tame the Land. So, actually, Iron Maiden wrote a lot of songs about a lot of history and stories, but I know what you're saying. There was a little...
Well, that Netflix documentary that's out there now about Tommy Lee's band.
Motley Crue.
That was really cool. I don't know if you've seen that.
I did. I started to watch it.
Wild, man. Tripping out. Like, that's what they did?
Yeah. Wow. I didn't... I only watched the first episode. There's like six or seven.
Yeah, there is. I watched them. I binge watched them all.
I saw all of the early days of Motley Crue, because Motley Crue came through Tingley. So I saw.
Oh, right.
I didn't see their very first EP, but I think Shout at the Devil.
Mm-hmm.
What was the one?
Mr. Nice
Feel
Guy.
Good.
Yeah, Mr. Feel Good. Yeah.
Mr. Feel Good.
Yeah, yeah.
So nice I saw, guy. You know, first the first year Tommy Lee's drums went up. Then they came up and they went upside down.
Right.
And then they came up and they went over the crowd.
They showed that in the Netflix, yeah.
So it was...
And they weaved in, like, real footage of them throughout the shows, throughout the episodes. It was really neat to see that.
That's back in the US Festival.
Oh, right.
That was a big festival.
But that then at the last episode of that documentary, it was the introduction of Nirvana and Pearl Jam. They started showing it was in Seattle because they're based out of Seattle, and you see like big murals of like the 10 record and stuff.
So that was the end.
That was the era. End. Yeah, that
because
crushed it.
I was, yeah. Like I said, I was huge into Guns N' Roses, and when Eddie Vedder came out, I was like, oh my God, I love this band. I love the Eddie Vedder band.
The Eddie Vedder band.
So good.
You know, he definitely took that to another level. No offense to Andy Wood. I mean, that was a great band, Green River and those guys. But, you know, Eddie Vedder totally took the songwriting of Mike and Stone and Jeff into a whole new stratosphere.
Between me and you, I feel like Andy Wood was okay.
It reminded me of glam rock.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, it was that same era of like... Mr. Feelgood.
Well, because they love to say, you know, they do these documentaries right before they broke free and became this mega band, you know, he died. And I'm like, I'm not sure they were headed for mega band.
No, I don't think so either.
I mean, he was okay.
I mean, all those guys were stuck in a rut playing local clubs for years, you know, making $50 a show and stuff. Then they were doing okay, but it was Eddie who launched him into the stratosphere. I mean, his voice.
And I, as much as I love Eddie Vedder, I do love the band. I love Mike McCready. I love Stone Gossard. It was a while before I really, you know, started, and I guess maybe even seeing shows, but I, you know, to see the part that Stone plays, you know, you don't always hear it. It's
right.
Just the music sounds so full, but, you know, separate him, you know, he plays some great little riffs.
Amazing. No, yeah. He's a good songwriter. What's your favorite show? What was your favorite show?
Madison Square Garden.
No, that's right. You had mentioned that too.
But I don't think it was because of had nothing to do with the band performance. I think it was just where I was seated.
You were in the middle somewhere, like the middle front.
Yeah. So if you were staring at the stage, I was on the right, maybe a quarter of the way back. So we were looking. You know, I was looking just past. Like it wasn't like down the side. I was looking. We were ahead of the stage, but
that's awesome.
It wasn't perfect, but it was. It was just the right enough crowd and a band.
I think I was on the first elevation on that side. The first few rows of seats on this elevation off the floor on Stone side.
Yeah, so honestly, we probably had the same, relatively same number, so we probably had the same group of tickets.
It was close, and I think your number is way lower than mine, but or at least I think I'm on the second kind of tier.
Actually, yeah, so we were in, I mean, that was a great placement to be at a show. I mean... Merriweather Post, I've seen him at Merriweather Post. Well, actually, I only went to one Merriweather Post show, but up at Camden, I had a friend of mine, she bought his front row. Now, it was all the way to the left. So it wasn't...
You're looking like this.
Yeah, we were looking, you know, so I couldn't even really see Mike McCready at all.
Right.
But I could see Eddie, and I could see down that...
Speakers.
Yeah, and it seems like I've had shows where you're behind the pillar. Like,
right, right.
No wonder I got this fucking seat. This fucking pillar here.
This pillar's got a lower number than I do.
Yeah. I think, and one of the... And you could probably attest to this. Some of the better shows are the people that I take.
Right. Yeah. That's an interesting point.
Well, did you ever know Matt Haley?
No, I have never. I know of him, obviously.
I took him to see Pearl Jam.
Did you?
In D.C.
Wow.
And he was like, wow.
Yeah.
After the show, we stopped for gas in Ken Island, and he drove off with the gas pump thing stuck in the truck.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. What was that, Matt? I don't know. Hold on. We're good.
Oh, my God.
He ripped the pump out.
Oh, my God.
Well, it had the breakaway.
Oh, wow.
That was that. And we were sober. We were both sober.
That happened to me. Similar situation. My buddy and I went to see Pearl Jam at Beaver Stadium in Penn State.
Yep.
That 2000 show.
Beaver Stadium? That's where Penn State plays?
Yeah. They play... Well, I'm sorry, not Beaver Stadium. It was the... the arena. I can't remember the name of the arena. It's slipping my it's a name of a guy. I can't remember. It's flipping, but it was like their longest show ever. Apparently it was like almost 4 hours long.
Wow.
So we drove out to Penn State, which from when we were I was living in Philadelphia, that was like a 4.5 hour drive just to get there. So my buddy and I took off work and I got out there. We got there around 1 o'clock, tailgated, you know, had great seats. My buddy was a new pro. He was a Metallica fan. You know, he mm-hmm. never saw Pearl Jam. So he happened to be at the longest show ever recorded in North America. You know, he was.
What's going on?
Right. So he drunk off his ass. You know, legs. We were standing the whole time. He's like, Carlos, can I sit down, man?
How you doing down there, man? That's what my son did at Firefly.
Dude, we got home. We got home at like 7 in the morning. We got lost. There's no navigation, no cell phones, right? So he was so tired and drunk. He was like, Carlos, I-95 West, man. I-95
West. Just go to the water.
Right, right. Like, no, it's south or north.
Oh, no, west would be the wrong water.
But there was no such thing as I-95. He was mumbling. We got lost. We pulled up and the sun was coming up. I was like,
rock and roll, baby.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's kind of like when we saw him at Madison Square Garden. We drove up. And we drove home that night.
Oh, wow.
And we took the train. Someone had this brilliant idea to get off some exit on the turnpike and then take the train in. It was fucking so stupid. And, you know, we did. I mean, it went smoothly. Right. But it's not something you want to do. And right. then drive. You know, I think we got to. Oh, and this is funny. We're driving, you know, we get on finally get off the fucking train. And we drive, pull on down to the freeway. And, shit. Hold on.
Yeah, jam.
So, anyway, sorry, I had to answer the phone. My son comes second to the Pearl Jam today. But, yeah, so we went up to Madison Square Garden and did the same thing. I mean, I think we got home at, like, 5 in the morning. I was, like, losing my mind. And, unfortunately, Super Dad, you're familiar with Super Dad stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I had a client's like, I got some tickets to 21 Pilots. You want them? And I go, oh my God.
Yeah.
I couldn't get any tickets for them.
Right.
When the shows were being released, the tickets were being released. I'm like, of course I'll take them. It's in Brooklyn. I'm like, oh fuck. And that's like it's like soon. I don't even know what I'm even going to do. And I told you, I'm going to let my wife and him go to the show, and I'm going to sit out in the car while they get to go.
That is Super Dad stuff right there.
That's Super Dad stuff.
Super Dad stuff right there.
Because I saw him. I saw 21 Pilots with him at Firefly. So I'm like, Christine can go with them.
They're a pretty good show, 21 Pilots.
Yeah, they're fun. Yeah,
I saw them at Firefly also. Probably the same Firefly.
Not the same commitment as Pearl Jam, but...
Yeah, you know, it's different now.
It is different.
And we're older too, man. We got a lot more going on.
Well, and I always say that's why we die, because we just become basically miserable. Well, and do you find that, like, you take a lot of our, you know, growing up and mm-hmm. our feelings and our emotions that we had as a kid and the commitment to the record or the mm-hmm. seeking it out, like you said... And, you know, we see how they have it today, and we're just kind of like, if you only knew.
Right.
If you only knew what it used to be like to get records.
Yeah, man, exactly. It's there's just, which was once a skinny menu of selection, now is, it seems like there's a stimulus everywhere of music and entertainment and video and YouTube just changed the culture of music in a lot of ways.
Do you watch... Pearl Jam concerts on YouTube?
Sometimes, yeah. Actually, a lot. Like, if I have to do, like, the honey-do list around the house, I'll throw on YouTube on the TV and just, okay, this is from Brazil, 2009, you know.
So where do you like to... Because I like 97.
Yeah, totally.
I like that tour. I mm-hmm. like that period of Pearl Jam.
Me too, late 90s.
That curly hair, I mean, you know. The Pearl Jam band. I mean, the Eddie Vedder band. But, you know, he had that curly hair. Right. And it was just a freaking
still
mess.
Raw. Yeah. Late 90s for sure. Love that era. Yield came out on my birthday, February 3rd. And I was living in Costa Rica at the time. I spent a year down there. And I remember, late 90s, 98. I remember just like, oh, man, I'm living down here in the rainforest. Yield is finally coming out. And I was in the middle of the rainforest on the coast. No malls, no nothing. I was like, how am I going to get this record? So I took a bus ride to San Jose, which is 6 hours, San Jose, Costa Rica, just to go there on my birthday and pick up the CD out of the mall. Went back to the coast and probably on rotation, I don't know. It felt like weeks.
I feel like Yield was a real turning point in that band. Not necessarily the band change, but like that was coming like right out of the fight with Ticketmaster.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like they were like kind of frowned upon by a lot of people, you know, that were in that business. Like, look what you're trying to do. It was like just like that. There was a documentary about
PG-20.
Of Yield. No, not that one.
There was Single Video Theory?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was like kind of the making of Yield.
It was, right.
And it was like they just kind of, it was like a real odd era for that.
Yeah, well, it was interesting to see like the different dynamics in the studio and how like Stone and Eddie both had like this power struggle. You know, and it was clearly Eddie's band, but Stone was like, yeah, but I wrote Alive and Even Flow, pal. Don't forget right. that, you know, like.
Well, and I think that's also kind of when, and I may be wrong about this, but it seemed like Eddie started playing a lot more guitar.
That's right. Those are my bathroom breaks in the show. You didn't he's picking up the guitar. I'm going to go take a leak. I'm going to go take a leak.
You're an Eddie hater. I hate that. Someone take this guy's picture and put it on the wall.
It's a joke.
Well, when he started playing Corduroy, you went to the bathroom.
No, Corduroy's different. But there's certain songs, like when I see him with, you know, throw the strap on, I'm like, all right, anybody else that use the bathroom, get a beer?
Need a beer? Hot dog?
Especially like Wishlist, like gung 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 gung.
Oh, okay. I don't even like that song. Well, so the last time I saw him, he opened the show with what is it, Yellow Moon, when he plays that big white guitar.
Right.
I was like, ugh.
Well, I'm wondering, like, what's going through Stone's mind when he's playing Wishlist, those three notes back and forth,
magnetic.
And then Single Video Theory, like, no one wanted to play the solo. Did you ever hear it? Did you see that little thing, a little controversy? They're like, who can get to the Ebo? And McCready's like, oh, I can't get to it out of the Ebo. And Stone's like, well, I'm coming out of a court. I can't get to the Ebo. And Eddie's like,
so what's Ebo? Is that electronic bow?
That's that like
magnetic,
some sort of sound when it makes against the strings, but it's like I don't know. It's just a weird little thing that Eddie loved that for that song.
Yeah,
but no one wanted to do the solo, right? It was hysterical. I'm watching these guys like they just don't hate. They must hate this song. And I think Mike McCready on an interview years ago said, "What's the one song you hate playing live?" He's like, "What's the one song you just like when you suddenly see it on the set list, you just cringe." He's like Corduroy.
Oh, Corduroy yeah. Wish List.
Well, those two songs, I think it was Corduroy. He said Corduroy, but Wishlist for me, I thought was just like, man, cool song. I mean, poppy, you know, it's catchy.
Listen, we can be honest. I mean, if you don't like it, you don't like it.
No, I dig the song.
You're talking like we got a million listeners that are going to come after your ass. It's you and me.
It's you and me. It's like the podcast for us.
I hate that song. Okay.
my other buddy who has a very low fan club member, he sits down during Better Man. He's protesting. He's like everybody, the whole arena goes crazy. Well, that song comes on.
I mean, let's be honest. Better Man is really how much the crowd sings and how much he allows it.
Right.
Because sometimes he'll be like, can't find a
right.
Better Man.
Can't
okay.
find out. I don't want to sing my song.
I can't find it. No one's going to sing. Oh, Better Man. He comes back. I'll help you then.
That song, definitely. It was cool when it came out and I was playing and I really enjoyed it. But boy, that song got played to murder.
Oh, I know.
To murder, man.
Well, and you know, it's not good when the kind of guy, at least speaking for myself, is anytime a Pearl Jam song comes on, I'm going to listen to it.
Sure.
So
of course.
When it's always played, I'm always going to hear it.
Right.
So
right.
It's my own damn fault.
Right. We're enabling it.
Right.
We're adding to the ratings.
I'll listen again. I love this song. But yeah.
But my one bud, he thought he was making this big deal by sitting down during the shows, during Better Man. He's like, look at me, man. I'm sitting down during Better Man. I'm like, dude, no one cares that you're sitting down during Better Man.
Are
get
you
up.
Protesting?
Yeah, that's what he was. He was protesting.
Is that guy sitting?
Oh, my God.
Let's kill him.
He's sorry, done. Brian. I'm going to send you the link to the show, Brian.
I don't know this guy. He's sitting. Clearly. I mean, we left a little early last. I mean, 3 hours, Eddie, please. No. I mean, that's a long time.
Have you left the Pearl Jam show early?
I have.
Oh, man, hand in your card, man.
I think they took it. a scout report. We got movement in the front. Who is that guy?
Pull the surveillance camera.
Now they do. They scan your face. He looks bored. Take him to the special class.
So you didn't stay for Yellow Lead Better and Rockin' in the Free World?
I listened to it from the up, you know, by the exit.
By
the glow of the exit light, I found that.
Want to be yellow. First in line to get out of the arena?
Yeah. I didn't stay for the, what is their
turn
famous
the lights on.
Credence song they play?
Oh, yeah, A Fortunate Son.
Yeah. I'm part of the red, white, and blue.
It's pretty funny, man.
Well, look, I'm old.
So am I.
God damn it. I paid. I stayed. I left.
Your timer went off. Okay, kids, it's bedtime.
I tell you what, as I pulled out of that parking lot, there's no cars. I was like,
winner.
Dad power. Old man power. I'm out.
Oh, my God.
Well, and you know, I hate to admit it, but the last show I went to was Lady Gaga.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Cause so she, was that a good show? Did she belt it out or what?
One of the best shows I've ever seen. And you know what? One of my things I've always been annoyed by Pearl Jam is that they don't have big screens. You know, I mean, I get it. Mm-hmm. Every time I've gone to a Pearl Jam show, they have those little screens on the side and you see it. But, you know, you got to show the people.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody gets front row.
Right. I was just thinking, why are you looking at your number's five digits, man? You're right there in front of them.
Right, but you're like, I got front row, but
you're like staring at the screen.
Yeah, I'm staring at the screen. I'm taking a video of the screen.
The screen on the front row.
That's so good.
Dude, get bigger screens, man. Hey, Mike, I'm talking to you.
Excuse me, these screens are not big enough.
Mike, I'm talking to you. I'm down
but look,
here,
there
Mike.
The last one I went to, we had front row, but it wasn't always front row.
Right,
you know,
right.
There's been times where, you know, a five digit number didn't get you the most amazing seat. You were lucky you got a seat.
During that one tour when they went to Reading, Pennsylvania for the Vote for Change tour, I was in the way back in Reading.
Yeah.
I was like, man, this is
ready to not go? Five digit. Right, you left early. Ready, ready to go. You see my beer.
Oh, better man's on. Anybody need a beer?
Corduroy. Bye bye. But, you know, so.
What is the song during the show that you're like, okay, wait, bathroom break. What's the song? You know it. What's the song?
Well, and I was, unfortunately, ever since I've seen a Pearl Jam show, I've been sober.
Oh, right, right.
So I'm hopped up on water. So I held it. But, you know, there's...
Nothing As It Seems for me. When that song comes on.
I don't like that song, Nothing As It Seems.
Yeah,
you know, I turn that off. At the show, in the car, I'm not a big fan of that.
Yeah.
I don't really have a song I don't like. I mean, you nailed it right there with that one, if I was going to find one.
Right.
I like, you know, it's a show. And honestly, I'll stay for the whole show, but I also like trying to get out a little bit early. Well, and I should have learned because I didn't tell you this, but when I went to the Meriwether Post, the reason I found out that all the fucking aisles were filled with cars is because we left early. And we fucking sat there.
Stuck in the parking lot.
We sat there while the show played, and then we sat there while they all left. Yeah, so I should have learned my lesson.
You're honking your horn. There's nobody around.
Beep, beep. Let me get some
God
traffic control here. I want to talk to the guy who decided this was a good idea.
Funny.
Same guy that decided me.
I got a great idea. We're going to leave during the third, the last song.
Got to figure it out.
We're going to beat the traffic.
No. We sat in traffic. Except nobody was in the cars.
It's hysterical.
So 50 shows, do you, on the 53rd show, did you go like, I think this is enough.
Well, my punch card's full.
Your son's even like, all right.
Well, my son's seen him like four or five times already. But I guess, you know, when my kids were born, it was definitely, I didn't get to everyone. There was that late 90s when I got back from Costa Rica. Oh, man, I'm crying. I was laughing so hard.
My idiocy.
So from like when I got back in 98 and to about when my son was born.
Did you try to name your kid Eddie?
No.
Did you think about it?
No. Well,
Mike.
Okay. So my
what's
defense,
your son's name?
Charlie.
Okay.
So So he's named after my nickname. My nickname is Charlie. That's what my mom and dad call me. No one else calls me Charlie, but my mom, dad, and my sister. And my
Charlie.
Yeah. But everybody else calls me Carlos, but I don't really care. It doesn't matter. But Charlie, so I named him after my, we named him after my my nickname. But my grandfather's name is Eduardo.
Ah.
It did cross my mind.
A slight moment.
A slight moment. It did cross my mind.
But I tried to name all my kids Eddie, and nobody would let me. Eddie Vedder Arquino. I don't care.
Eddie Vedder Arquino.
That's his name.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
How about David? All right. How about Sam?
Charlie and Ellie. Yep, Charlie and Ellie. My wife is Amy. But yeah.
I'm so glad you didn't name your wife Eddie.
You know, kudos to my wife, because to this day at 46 years old.
Yeah, kudos to your wife.
For putting up with me, and every time we get in the car, it's Pearl Jam Radio on Sirius XM, and she doesn't just flinch. She just sits there and just goes with it. She's like, for 20 plus years.
Has she been to a show?
Yeah, it's her favorite show, too. She loves it. Not obviously not to the degree that you and I do, but she loves the shows just like any other, like, concert goer would love them, because it's an amazing, amazing place to be. But, yeah, she puts up with me and my Pearl Jam-ness. It's pretty funny. Yeah.
I've been.
Dude, that has got to be the funniest story in the world.
I didn't even want to tell it.
I'm still thinking about it, man.
I didn't
even want to
tell the story.
Dude, we're going to get out of here. We're going to be the first ones out of here. That's like a Saturday Night Live skit, man.
Absolutely.
Honk, honk.
Sober.
Sober. I could be drunk right now.
That's a drunk decision on a sober move by a sober guy. I got a great idea.
I did go with some friends to those types of shows where they wanted to get out to beat the traffic, especially the sports shows. The sports games that we went to. I remember the Eagles. You know, I remember been to one of the Eagles playoffs games, and this couple.
Are you an Eagles fan?
Yeah, I'm from Philadelphia originally, so I'm all Philly.
I'm a Cowboys fan.
Are you really? Oh God! And in your Pearl Jam card. I'm going to confiscate it, man.
Well, I grew up in Albuquerque. It was America's team. We didn't have the Albuquerque armadillos.
Right.
We had the Cowboys.
Yeah. No,
so
definitely.
If I'd grown up in Philly, I'm sure I'd have been an Eagles fan.
Yeah, I mean, just
easily influenced.
I'm not like, hey, you're a Cowboys fan, die. I'm like, you know,
Did you ever see the commercial where those guys, they're walking and they're like, yo, there's a baby locked in the car. They all gather around. They're looking in. Oh, geez, we're going to have to bust the window. Call the cops. The guy goes, oh. Hold on. He's got a Cowboys jersey on. Fuck it.
They just start walking
away. Is there a commercial like that? There was a commercial.
What?
Yep.
Oh, that's wrong.
That is. That's Eagles fans for you.
Yeah, we're definitely not living down but cold weather towns typically have the most hardcore fans.
Very passionate.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I appreciate
Albuquerque.
That.
I mean, really, California, San Diego? I mean, they'd rather be on. I mean, they're doing yoga during the NFL games. You know what I mean?
I saw Metallica and Guns N' Roses at Jack Murphy Stadium.
Yeah? Wow.
Where the Chargers used to play.
Right.
If you've been to San Diego, that thing is awesome.
Yeah. I have the Coliseum in San Diego. That's where I saw Pearl Jam 2000. Oh, no. Is it the Coliseum? Sports Complex, I think it's called?
Yeah, the Sports
Complex. Sports Complex.
I saw a lot of bands there.
The one song that he played that he only did for San Diego for that tour in San Diego is Arc, when he has those tracks.
Yeah.
He did that for San Diego.
Okay.
That was really cool.
In the day where everyone used to hang up, put the signs up?
Mm-hmm.
And what was the sign they always used to put up?
So it depends on the tour, but I remember seeing Breath.
Breath used to always be. Breath. Everyone always wanted to.
Hey, that's a hardcore. That's deep, man.
That's deep.
That's deep. Yeah, I'm impressed.
I love Breath.
Is it Breathe
or is it Breath?
Breath and a Scream. Breath.
Breath. Okay.
Yeah. Breathe is with an E at the end, I think, isn't it?
Well, yeah. And I think, and that's funny because there used to be, remember, State of Love and Trust? The mm-hmm. song State of Love. But it used to be. There used to be many versions of it
right. Because
they didn't know what he was saying. So
it had a
different title, but it was always the same song.
Impressed. Tom.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Listen,
that's
I do.
That's deep, dude. That's deep.
I love Pearl Jam.
Oh, I can tell, man. I do, too.
I'm all in.
Don't leave early.
I got my moments, but I'm committed.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome, man. It's super fun.
It's
do
a good,
all day.
Well, it's a good band, you know, and it is amazing because they're around still.
It is, and they're still producing records. They're making records, too. They need to bring it back, Dave Abruzzese, but that, you know.
Well, and I always say, why don't they just do it like 10.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, you listen to 10.
The thing is, Eddie's not a fan of it.
And it was really a lot of reverb.
It was produced. It was overly produced.
Yeah.
But I don't think Eddie likes the record, like, even though it launched him into the stratosphere. I don't think he has the same. I think he appreciates it, but I think he wants to be known for his newer stuff. He actually said in an interview he thinks he's a better band than they were, better band now than they were back then, which I thought was like, man, dude, come on.
I think they probably have their shit together better.
Oh, yeah.
They were a bit of a mess early.
Yeah, but that's where the rawness comes from, you know? That's where the innocence and the naivety, you know, all that, you know, stems from. So, oh, it's awesome. Actually, I'm going to be in Seattle in like 2 weeks. I have to go out to Urban Float Corporate. So I want to, let me stop by the coffee shop. Yes.
Are you going to bring back something?
Yeah.
Are you going to BFF bring me something back? Sweet. Well, you know, just a little bit of a change of topic. I did go by Mudslingers this morning.
There you go.
And talk to them.
Podcast. Layla. She's really cool.
Well, and Susan, do you know Sue that works in there? Yeah, I've known Susan Sue Anderson. Forever.
Yeah, she's an unlimited member at Urban Float. She floats a couple times a week.
I've known Sue I've known her 20-something years.
That's awesome.
So,
yeah.
I just went over there and
there she was.
Well, and we love Wawa coffee. But I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go get some coffee. So I went over there and I got my wife a coffee and I took it to her. Talked to Sue and you know, gave her my card and mentioned about the podcast and took my wife the coffee, who's really the Wawa coffee fan. And she texted me. She goes, I loved it. It was delicious.
It's good.
So
they're a nice group there. And, you know, Sue's done a 2-hour float. 2 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, dude. She's hardcore into it, man.
All right. Could you float for 2 hours?
I'd have to work up to
it. I'm not that sleepy. I'm busy.
Yeah. And that's why you need to float.
Well, do you want to talk something about the float?
Sure.
Because I love the float.
Were you able to relax when you were in there?
I was.
Okay.
And, you know, people talk about, you know, meditating and, you know, if you're into meditating, are you into it?
I'm not a hardcore meditator, but I am into mindfulness and I'm into, I'm learning how to be more present-minded, and that's what I've learned from this experience, for sure. But I wouldn't call myself a hardcore meditator. Amy is, my wife, and Maxine. And Maxine's a very advanced yoga person, practitioner, so she's very mindful as well. So they're the leadership of the business, right? So I'm behind the scenes, but no, I'm not a good meditator.
My look on my look on meditation is really about... Like, if I just laid on the floor and I tried to focus, my mind would be like, I'd be thinking about work, podcasting, you know. It's stopping that, you know, stopping all that and just being centered in the moment.
It's sort of like that, but not necessarily rejecting the thoughts, letting them happen, but not judging them. That's the key.
Right.
That's what I learned through it. Like, when there's like three... People come into the spa and they're so excited. They almost want to just run into the room and do a cannonball. Like, everybody slow down, right? So the key to it is finding being still, right? Letting go of time and letting go of judgment. If you can do those three things, right, your experience, your float will feel like 10 minutes, honestly.
Right.
Just to let go and be in the present moment. Not to say that you have to, like, you can think about the podcast, you can think about picking up the kids, you can think about the salon. It's accepting those thoughts, but imagining them on a river and just watching them.
Well, but the thing about that, though, is if I'm letting the thoughts, anything that I'm thinking is not in the present. Because if I'm in the present, I'm not thinking. I'm in it. So if I'm thinking about a podcast, it's like a future podcast or a past podcast. Mm-hmm. If I'm thinking about work, it's future work or past work, because I'm clearly floating in a tank, so I'm clearly not working. So that's my trouble with that, is that if I'm managing thoughts while I'm floating, they're not really unless I'm thinking I'm floating.
But it's the judgment side of thing. I think whether you think of the future or the present, past or whatever, it's just a matter of observing the thought for what it is and watching it.
Yeah.
And not necessarily having to do anything about it. Just don't allow it to create cloudiness and just watch it, you know, just be there and let go. So we tell clients to just, you know, watch, use the words let go and just let go and be. And
surrender is great.
Surrender. That's a great idea. Surrender to time, surrender to judgment.
As you get older, do you surrender more?
You get wiser and you use those different tools, surrender, letting go. Floating's helped me in all of those aspects personally. Just, you know, my life with managing my kids, my, you know, managing or dealing or coping skills, especially, I thought.
Having kids is a total game changer.
You ain't lying, man.
For the better.
Oh, it's totally.
I mean, I, you know, I'm 50.
Now you look great for 50, man.
Well, thank you, but I'm still 50, and I have, you know, my wife had a little girl who I call my daughter, but she's 6. You know, I mean, I'm supposed to be at the age where they're like 18 and leaving.
Yeah, you'll be 62.
But I think every day how grateful I am because honestly, she's just, and my other son Sam, he's 8, and my other son's 13, so they're all young. But like this morning, we got up, we went to Rise before school.
How cool is that?
My 8-year-old, he just, oh my God, he just wants to go to the gym. And, you know.
That's awesome.
We were at the gym, we dropped David off, and then we went to the gym for a half hour, and then picked up Teresa, and then went to elementary school. But, you know, if I didn't have those guys, maybe I would have just stayed in bed. I would never stay in bed. I can't even, if I wake up and the sun's up, I'm freaking out.
You're going, yeah.
But, you know, I maybe would just sit around, or I don't know what I would do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they really keep me going. Mm-hmm. They keep me unhappy.
Roll back, delete.
No, but, you know, there's some humility in that. You know, if it's all about me, hey, you know,
right.
Take care of Tom Day.
Yeah.
I unfortunately, whatever it is, I've gone through a divorce, and, you know, I share custody of my kids, so... you know, Sunday, I'm like, all right, they're going to their mom's. I got all week. If Monday comes, I'm like, oh, God, I miss all my kids.
Right.
And it's just, oh, it's a sad week, really, for me. Sure. Even though I have Teresa, and, you know, she's amazing, and it's not that extreme. But, you know, I need to kind of like, okay, where am I taking? You know, I need to, it can't be all about me.
Right.
And so I'm really grateful at my age to have them and very blessed. And I've said before, I feel bad for people that don't have kids. I don't think that's really an appropriate statement because everybody, you know, does what they do, but some people miss out on some things.
There's definitely, you know,
and they're like, suck us for having kids. Right,
dinks.
Idiots.
Yeah, look at those guys. But no, I agree. You know, Amy and I are very blessed as well to have children, and we would do anything for them. We're living and doing the things that we do for them. That's how I look at what I'm doing, you know, just so that way they'll one day be appreciative and take care of me.
Can you wheel me into the sun?
Son, you got to change the diaper the other way, son.
The Pokemon goes in front. Well, I was looking at your Facebook, and I guess we went through Mother's Day.
Yes, on my mom and I.
I go, oh, look, his wife's a little older.
That's a compliment to my mom. She looks young.
Good. Yeah, your mom
young.
Looked good.
Yeah, she's a young, you know, my mom, you know, she had me when she was only 20, 21, I think. So I have a young mom, generally speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
my dad's an old fart.
She did it. Your mom did it the right way. She had you, and then you left, and she got to enjoy it.
Well, she's retired and traveling the world. She's in California right now. My mom's side lives in the Bay Area, so like I have a whole other side of the family that's in the Bay Area. So she's out there for 3 weeks bringing my 90-year-old grandmother back. But yeah, my mom retired, and she's doing great, and I'm really, really proud and really proud of her and what she's coming here as an immigrant from the Philippines in late 1972 to make it on the airplane and have me born like literally 2 months, a month later.
Well, that's that's a great story considering, you know, all the stuff, you know, we've become like with this, you know, the Mexicans coming across the border, and it's like, why are we all of a sudden so... You know, a lot of people came across the border. A lot of people weren't born here in this country, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, if you look at the way the world's evolving. Look how many mixed, you know, nationality kids and mixed race kids there are right now.
Yeah.
And it's going to continue to evolve that way because of the influx of Europe and Asia and Mexico and South America.
And I definitely don't mean to get on some touchy topic because that's not for this podcast.
Yeah. Back to Pearl Jam.
I did want to ask you, so what's it like, you know, because I was looking at your Facebook, smart guy, you know, you've got a great, I guess, resume. Yeah. I mean, what's it like to go from all that to now having Urban Float in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware?
Yeah, great question. I mean, during my IBM days, this is third small business, my second active small business. I was at a software company based out of Lewis for a while. And then when I went to IBM, when the business was acquired, I went to IBM and the business was acquired, and I did, I was the guy living in the beach commuting to DC and back and Raleigh, North Carolina and back. So I was traveling a lot just on the Eastern Mid-Atlantic seaboard. And then I got poached by GoPro and I did international travel for GoPro. I did like 120,000 miles in the air a year, right? Jeez. For 2 years. Right. So, and at age, 40 at the time, 43, 42, 41, you know, during that time, it wasn't a person, at least where I was in life, with my two small children at the time. My kids were young. Mm-hmm. Now I think about it, I was probably just turning 40. So when I left GoPro in 2016, I had opportunities to go, talk with other big companies like Life is Good and other kind of similar type of big brand names. But it required me to get back on an airplane. You know what I mean? And I was just kind of over it. So
have to at some point redefine happiness?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I wanted to be more, when I was traveling for GoPro, as amazing as that was, I would miss basketball games. I would miss milestones here and there, and I just, Amy and I said, let's take a risk. Let's do something different.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the precipice for Urban Float and doing something with that we felt had a lot of meaning and had a lot of, that we can bring to the community that would have a huge benefit, which I think it does right now. Or add an added benefit. But that's what it went. And that evolution's kind of odd. We went from big business and technology and cool brand GoPro to now small business guy for a growing brand, but definitely not to the scale of a GoPro for sure. So I just, that's kind of how it happened. And like I said, I'm reinventing myself in a certain way. But I credit that experience to give me the business development skills that I have. And that's kind of my skill set is really in business development. So hopefully that will pan out for me here.
I think it's panning out. I think you guys are doing a great job. The different, I laugh because I own a small business, but, I went to the School of Hard Knocks. I barely got through. In fact, I got my GED. I was just so caught up in just me and partying and so I wouldn't say I wasted a big portion.
You're present minded. You're in the present moment.
Yeah. But I always like to talk to people that are like trained in business because, when I earn a dollar, I want to stash it.
Right.
Where you need to like put it back in the business to make the business grow. I remember when I first opened and I called Matt, I'm like, oh my God, there's $3,000 in the bank. Did you pay the rent yet? I go, no.
No.
Did you pay the bills? No. Did you pay the employees' commission? No. He goes, you don't have anything in the bank. I was like, oh, I got to go. I got to beat traffic.
You got all your receipts?
You have a CPA? Yes. But, it's a scary thing, to start a small business.
It is, man. And School of Hard Knocks to me is just as valuable, or if not more, than going the academic route. I don't think school defines you, at all. I went to University of Delaware and
That's good to know because, people think, oh, where can I go to school? University of Delaware. It's a school right here.
Yeah. Right, right.
And you did it.
I did.
It turned out just fine.
It's fine. But to me, school doesn't define you. It gives you opportunity.
Right.
If it's a conservative, if you go on a conservative path, if you want a 9-to-5 job and you want a set salary, I think that's the right path. But if you really want to create and define your own pathway. I don't think school necessarily has to be the answer. I really don't, and that's what I've learned. But school has given you, it gives you an opportunity. I think it gives you a door opening or a door crack to certain things where if you didn't have that or per se, those doors may not be open for you as, or they might be harder to open if you went the long way.
I had a lady the other day. She goes, "You keep using the wrong there." Well, I didn't go to school. What do you want from me? I mean, it's a crapshoot.
T-H-A-R. What can I say?
T-H-E-I-R, T-H-E-R-E.
Yeah, I get that mixed up, too.
Yeah, it's like...
I get that mixed up all the time. Because stop judging me, lady.
But you did go to school, darn it. So it doesn't... Yeah, yeah. School's full of it. Well, listen... I would sit here and do this.
No, let's wrap it up, all man. Day. This is great. No, I had fun, Tom. This is fun, man.
Yeah, and we can talk about Pearl Jam. When I said to you the other day, the good thing about doing a podcast, we can do whatever.
Yeah.
There's no rule.
Right.
So let's do this again.
Totally, man.
You know, whenever you want.
Oh, this is fun. I hope you enjoyed it.
I do. I'm like, shit, I got to cut hair today. I want to do a podcast. I like doing them.
It's fun.
It's just chatting, man.
I love talking and having insightful thoughts and breaking things down, peeling the onion back.
Well, and I told you, I texted you that Preston said he'd come on my podcast.
That's cool.
And I had given his wife a card. I was like, you know, he ain't coming on my podcast.
Right, right.
And I ran into him at Wall. I'm like, Preston, you come on my podcast? He goes, well, if you want to talk about houses, you probably need to have Chris on.
Oh, right.
If you want to talk about land development, now I can do that. And I go, I'm not really smart enough to talk about land development. I just want to chat. You know, maybe what are you playing in your CD player right now?
No.
You know, he's a big supporter of Firefly. What, you know.
Yeah.
Let's learn some
Tell
stuff.
Tell him that rent check's on the way.
Yeah, oh, shit. Well, we're both. And, you know, I will have him on and I will thank him because, you know what? He did give me an opportunity to rent this place. And that was 10 years ago.
That's cool. No, and same here.
I had to go upstairs to the big office and see Preston. And Matt, I wish you'd have met, you'd have liked Matt. He said, just let him talk. He's very smart. Just let him talk and shut up. I said, okay. So that's what I did. I just sat there and I signed. And
same
he,
here.
You know, I'm he very, gave, I'm
we're in, very appreciative of him and his team. And, you know, Urban Float was certainly an out in left field concept mm-hmm. for him. Like,
yeah.
What is this place? But he took a risk on us, and we're definitely appreciative as well.
Yeah, so I'm excited to have him on and learn a little bit
awesome.
More about him.
I'll tune in.
I will. Oh, yeah.
I will.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right, brother.
All right.
I'll talk to you later.
See you.
Bye.